Hey, folks, in this interview, I'm talking to Kevin Gilbert about 10 careers in 40 years. This is TWIP. Hey, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I am your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today on the show, we're talking to the illustrious and talented photojournalist, photographer, storyteller, image maker, Kevin Gilbert. And this is kind of one of those origin story type shows where, you know, we just kind of dive into the background of some really notable photographers that have been doing crazy stuff for a long time and have seen patterns in the chaos. We're going to talk about that chaos. We're going to talk about photography, and we're going to talk about his newfound love for black and white photography. So, Kevin Gilbert, welcome to This Week in Photo, man. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks, Frederick.
Yeah.
Love being here.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. I mean, you and I were chatting in person at WPPI a couple of weeks ago, and I remember your talk was centered on black and white, and you were talking about, you and I were just sort of off to the side talking about your newfound epiphany for black and white photography and some of the changes you were going to make. But you're a journalist, so I'm going to bury the lead and start somewhere. We're going to start somewhere else. I want to start with your history. And just before we started recording, we were just sort of talking about your history, and a lot of it I had no idea that you were doing all this stuff. So how did Kevin Gilbert get started in photography first, and then take me through sort of the highlights of where you've been?
Sure. It's funny. I never really wanted to be a still photographer. I wanted to be a cinematographer. I worked in a movie theater all through high school, sweeping up the spills on the floor and making the popcorn, and just doing all that kind of stuff, taking tickets, sweeping, all that. But I got to watch movies because I could go stand in the back, and it was during the years of Raiders of the Lost Ark, Jaws, Grease. I mean, you just named a bunch of movies from that time frame, Blazing Saddles. Yeah. I would watch these 30, 40, 50 times. Knew the words, but what attracted me to it was the story and the epic visuals. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about, oh, this guy's a great actor or these kind of things. I just got so hooked on the visuals that I said, I want to be a cinematographer. And I went to Syracuse University, which had a great program at the Newhouse School for photography and film and advertising and all the kind of new media stuff. And new media back in 1981, that was no new media. It was a film and a camera, and that was it.
Yeah.
I got there and I realized that being a cinematographer really kind of sucked, because whether it was, I don't know, adult ADD or something, I couldn't stand working on a project that was going to take 4 months. I needed to do it today and do it tonight. And that's why I started, I went to London on an overseas program and switched my major to being a still photographer, and ended up living in a flat with five other photographers, chasing all kinds of crazy things. And I just said, this is what my calling is. I love to tell stories. I love to photograph people. I love to go places. I love to travel. I love to do all these fun things. And photography was my entry into sports, politics, television, you name it. In the photo world, I've probably done something. Now, maybe not, the world's best fashion photographer, but I've shot fashion. I've shot some pretty good fashion or yeah. Food. But I've, done that kind of high-end stuff, like, covering the White House, working on network television shows, It's I don't have a linear path. Let's put it that way.
Well, tell me about the White House stuff, because you mentioned that you had some involvement with the White House Press Photography Corps over there. Mm-hmm. What was your involvement there? Were you like making coffee, or were you running things?
Yeah, I was the coffee boy, the bag man. I was working in Washington, D.C. I had grown up in a very political family. I loved the whole politics thing. I loved Capitol Hill. I really loved Capitol Hill, and was working, on our staff at the Washington Times. So I was chief photographer. I had guys like Steve Crowley and Carol Powers and Dana Smith and all these great storytellers. And I, worked right alongside Doug Mills and all these other great photographers today. And so I got involved. I really wanted to be involved in the White House News Photographers, because it seemed like such a great organization of 500 individual photographers and videographers, storytellers all together in one city. And we were all working together. We'd see each other every day at assignments, you know, staking out Monica Lewinsky's apartment at the Watergate, you know, doing all these crazy things. And it just became like, I've got to help out. And the association was kind of floundering. Membership was down, didn't really do anything. It was kind of one of these, it became kind of a cheesier black tie event. Mm-hmm. The president hadn't come in many years. And I along with David Ake from the Associated Press and Bob Pearson from AFP, just other great journalists, we all ran together as a slate. And I was elected vice president, became president of the White House News Photographers. And I started doing that for 5 years. Working alongside my friend Pete Souza, we created the Eyes of History photo contest for the White House News Photographers.
Yeah.
David Valdez and Dave Kennerly and all those other photographers who had held great positions in the White House photography area all became friends. And I got to do things and try to bring the organization up. And what we did is we went from almost bankrupt to having four major sponsors. You know, back this was, you know, when Kodak was around and Fuji, they were dogging it out, and Canon and Nikon. Mm-hmm. And we ended up taking the association to a level where we were inviting the world press photographers to come in, and we'll look at their pictures up on the big screens. The Military Photographers of the Year contest, all these groups. I said, you know what, we need to just bring everybody together. This is silly to have all these. Let's share a night of photography, a black tie event, senators and celebrities and everything else. And we did that. And we really took it from, some people say, from zero to hero in 5 years. And I'm very proud of what we did and how we set the association back on the right course, got people involved. But yeah, that was I was chief photographer for the Washington Times. So I kind of had the best of both worlds. They could cover news of the city and of the nation and the world, and at the same time, you know, go drive home at night.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, I bet you have some stories. Especially you mentioned Pete Souza, right? Because for many years he was the official White House photographer, so he's you know, following presidents around and, you know, getting photos that many of us dreamed of getting, right, of somebody as important as the president of the United States. And you and he were friends and rubbing elbows. So that's pretty amazing. Do you have any stories you can share with us about, you know, the White House, you know, either current or past administrations?
Well, there are some stories I can't tell.
I love that pregnant pause. That's the best part. Right there.
I always have to. My wife's always like, "You're not going to tell that story again, are you?" Or we'll be in a small intimate group of a couple of couples, and she'll say, "You should tell that story about Hillary Clinton." And I'm like, "No, I can't." Needless to say, there are just quite a few. You know, when you're on the outside covering the White House from a journalist standpoint, you don't have much access. Guys like Pete Souza and Chuck Kennedy and, you know, David Valdez and Bob McNeely and all these other guys, they had inside access. They were the fly on the wall in meetings throughout. And that's why, you know, Pete had that incredible access and rapport with President Obama to do those books. Mm-hmm. But then you look at it and say, well, he must have just, you know, he must have been a Democratic type photographer. Pete Souza covered the Reagan administration as a personal photographer of the president.
Yeah.
So he was on both sides of it, being a newspaper photographer from the Chicago Times in between. There are stories that you can tell and stories that seemed funny at the time that don't seem so funny at the time.
Yeah, no, I bet there's a fine line between funny and tragic, right? So.
Yeah, and it was one of those stupid things where I said something I shouldn't have said. It was just kind of at a private event at the White House, and I said something to Mrs. Clinton. It was during the Monica Lewinsky time, and I was very quickly ushered out the door of the White House.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Come over and I'll share a beer with you, and I'll tell you the story of exactly what I said. But it wasn't very nice, and it was just a brain fart. Did I really say that? I just remember going, no, that I didn't say that. I was only thinking it.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody has a touch of Tourette's every now and then, right?
it was that, but, yeah, you know, and it was interesting. People always ask me about, you know, what was it like to be at the White House? And I'm like, well, I was there, but I'd sit in the press room and they'd give us 30 seconds in the Oval Office and that was it for the day. I'm like, okay, that seemed, how monumental was that? No big deal.
Wow. Looking at your past, though, Kevin, you know, looking at your past and how close you were to politics and the White House and things that, you know, just the pulse of journalism in Washington, D.C., looking at where you were back then and where things are now, what's your feeling? You know, what's your feeling on the way that the White House is interacting with the press, both photographers and, you know, television and print journalists versus how they used to deal with it? Are you surprised? Are you happy? Are you sad? What are your feelings?
I'm really sad for the way it is. I mean, I would never want to go back and cover the White House the way it is now. And I know a lot of photographers that were there are just like, no, you know, we were there during the golden age when it was, you know, it was Reagan, it was Bush, it was Clinton, it was Bush again. I mean, those years was when I was there during those years. And, you know, Reagan would walk into a room and you just like got goosebumps because it was like he was this bigger than life character. Mm-hmm. And he was just so nice. And, you know, there was one time it was early on, I was 24 years old, and the editor of the paper was getting a private one-on-one with the president in the Oval Office. And they're like, Kevin, this is going to be a front page story. So we want you to make sure the lighting is right. Take a flash. And okay. So I bring an umbrella and a light stand and the whole thing. And this was back in like the Vivitar 283 days. If people can remember those, right? Set it on yellow, F4, you're done.
Yeah,
right?
I remember those, yeah.
So I go to the Oval Office. The press secretary walks me in. President, you know, I just kind of walk in. I've been in there a ton of times, so it wasn't like, oh my gosh, what is this place? But I walked in and out of the corner of my eye, there was somebody sitting over at the Resolute desk, at the president's desk. And I just kind of like, oh, I'm not going to look over there. And I went, they said, president will be here, your editor will be here. So I set up a light, kind of nice cross light. It's just a dopey little Vivitar strobe. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just standing there. I mean, it takes all of 15, 20 seconds to set up a light stand in a strobe like that. I don't need to test it. I have no way to test it. So I just know it works. And I'm standing there. And I'm like, should I turn around and look over there? Should I say anything? Or should I just stand here like a fly on the wall? So I decided just to stand there. I mean, I'm a young kid. I don't think I'd been in the Oval Office privately with the president before. In the gaggle of photographers, yeah, it was okay. And all of a sudden, I get this hand on my shoulder. And I get, well, are we ready yet? And I lost. I just, my arm went out. The light stand fell over. The whole thing. And the president just turned and walked away and laughed.
That's awesome.
You know, Secret Service agent was in the room, was kind of like everything okay? You know, and I was just like, sorry. And I just picked the light stand up and he goes, okay.
Oh, your nerves must have been a wreck. Oh, man.
Yeah, and it was just a stupid headshot. I mean, it was a talking head. You know, you do for interviews, you know, three or four different hand gestures. And
yeah.
But yeah. This was, you know, I used to work in the Wilkes-Barre Times Leader newspaper in upstate Northeast Pennsylvania, and you know, you covered the dog catcher, you covered the mayor, you never covered the president one-on-one, and I was just blown away by Mr. Reagan. He was a great president, and you started going down the list, and it was really kind of fun to be traveling with the president. I mean, we didn't travel so much, but like the wire service guys, and the events in town were just so great. And then President Bush came along. And he, you know, he just passed away. He was just like the nicest guy. He was like your granddad next door. He knew your names, and he'd pitch horseshoes with you, and he'd invite, nice. And you know, all the guys that traveled with him, you know, in Kennebunkport in the summertime would bring their families and barbecues, and it was just an incredible relationship. The Clintons came along, and they understood visuals, but there were times when they just did not want us near them at all. Mm. And then Bush 43 came along. And he had been around his dad. He was tolerant of the photographers, but by then it was starting to get so closed in, you know, everything was going digital by that time. And it was it just wasn't fun anymore.
Yeah.
Because
he was under the microscope too. He's making, you know, some unpopular decisions that were lose-lose situations, right?
And more and more of the photographers' budgets were, you know, photo newspapers' budgets were being cut, and you know, we would send a photographer, you know, once a week if it was some big giant story. But we're like, you know, we're paying the Associated Press and Reuters a lot of money, and they're giving us pictures every day, so why do we have to go? So, you know, when I say the golden times, it was when me as a photographer for the Washington Times got to go. I got to go to the White House, you know, and I've probably been in the White, you know, in the Oval Office, I don't know, 500 or 600 times maybe,
yeah,
over the course of times. Yeah. You know, one time I did get to stand on the roof of the Oval Office during a summit, a peace signing was some Middle Eastern leaders and the president, and it was a big deal peace signing. And they said to us at one point, and we, you know, send out 5 or 6 photographers, all these different angles. They said, "Hey, would you guys like to stand up on the roof of the Oval Office and shoot from there?" And we're like, "Oh yeah!" So the three of us got escorted up on top of the White House. We walked on the roof right above the Oval Office, and was able to shoot the president and the two leaders and their wives and the Gores as they're all walking this nice, you know, pathway back into the Oval Office. And it was one of those incredible moments where you're like, holy crap, I'm standing on the whole roof of the Oval Office, and there's the president, and there's, you know, Shimon Peres and King Hussein. And it was like, yeah,
I that's mean, that's history. You're making history at that point.
Yeah.
I remember, I mean, I had a chance to go into the White House a couple of times during the last administration, and I was there doing this town, I think what they call it, the town hall meeting, but they were doing it through Google Hangouts, and it was, you know, Obama sitting in a chair doing a Google Hangout talking to citizens around the country, and it was in the Roosevelt Room. So, and I was part of the crew that was helping put that together, and I remember just looking at that door, because the Oval Office is connected to the Roosevelt Room. I was like, behind that door is the Oval Office. That was the closest I ever got to it. And my fondest memory, and I have a photo, an iPhone shot of this, is of me in the restroom that's right outside the Oval, which I'm sure you've used a couple times.
No, they never let us use those. We had to go in fact.
Oh, really? I got to use it. I got to use the presidential restroom, so I was excited about that.
Yeah. No, it was a real grand time, and they just there were just moments in history that you just felt like I was there, and they're really hard to. They just all kind of blend together at a certain point. But it was pretty remarkable to be there. You know, interesting for fans of the West Wing TV show. I'd consulted with them on and off over 7 years, and was in a couple of episodes as an extra.
Oh, nice!
But they all became really dear friends, the producers and Martin Sheen and Brad Whitford and you know, all those guys, because I was out there a lot. But was really amazing the very first time they walked me onto the set at Warner Brothers. I couldn't believe it that everything was exactly the same as the real White House.
They nailed it, huh?
I mean, there's like a ramp coming out of the press office that makes a hard left turn heading towards the cabinet room, and it's like wheelchair access.
Yeah,
like it was there.
Wow.
They don't need that in the TV show, but they were down to the details. You know, you go. I'm like, oh, so I go in here. It's a cabinet room. They're like, yep. Open the door. It's a cabinet room. Wow, it's right there. There's the Roosevelt room. There's the Oval Office. And it was, you know, it was incredible. And you know, one of my first visits there, Martin Sheen came up to me and started peppering me with all kinds of questions about politics. And he's like, but you're there. You understand all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm a photographer. You know, I understand the politics of them and these things, but do I care about policy? Not really.
Yeah.
Unless it matters to the story. And he said, all right, yeah, let's just go grab some lunch. And we went over to the craft service truck outside the set and got some food. And we walked back into the Oval Office, and Martin sat in the president's chair, opened up his tuna sandwich, and we sat there and had tuna fish sandwiches in the Oval Office.
Oh, my God.
TV show.
That's like, crazy.
And I just thinking, this is like the Twilight Zone. This can't be real.
I'm being punked right now. Something's going on. Well, Kevin, you know, as we were again talking about before, you've seen lots of evolution in the world of photography, both on the technique side and the tool side, and you know, even the recording media side, you know, going from black and white to slide film, you know, and beyond. What's your feel now? I mean, you know, a lot of people are like, you know what, digital is the end all be all. And there's some people, myself included, that are like, yeah, I think digital's great, but I think, you know, everything has a plus and a minus in terms of what you get and what you lose. And part of what we lose with digital is like what you and I were talking about, is the artisanship and the expertise needed to nail an exposure on slide film. That's gone, I think, right? Because you don't necessarily need to nail an exposure anymore with RAW and digital cameras.
Do you know the phrase that kills me, that every time I hear it, I just shake my head. I'll just fix it in post.
Yeah.
Or I'll fix it later. And it's like, no, shoot the picture. Be true to what the medium is. Shoot the picture the way the exposure is right, the white balance is right. You know, I don't shoot RAW. I'm one of those, call me old school if you want, but you know, I grew up shooting transparency film all through high school and college. And when I went to work for the Washington Times, we shot transparency film every day. Every day you'd walk into a hearing room under tungsten lights and go, oh crap, switch to tungsten film or switch to the other camera because it's I got the right gels on it. I mean, we learned color, we learned light, we learned low light, we learned, you know, noise and all this other stuff. So when digital came around, I mean, you know, we're shooting black and white as well. I mean, mm-hmm. we all grew up shooting black and white and, you know, developing pictures of, you know, your girlfriend, you know, in high school.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
What you did. That's yep. what everybody did. And you know, shooting transparency film, you had to nail it. You had to be right. And if it wasn't right, they just push that slide off to the side and then say, nope, go right in the trash. Even if it was like one stop over, they didn't care. Gone.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it? The latitude of slide film is what, plus or minus a third of a stop, right? Or less.
Yeah. And so you'd always, you know, you would play the games where you were a third over and it's like, oh boy, can I really go a full stop over or under? Mm-hmm. You learn to play the games, but then, you know, transparency film just kind of went away because everybody was shooting neg film, and neg film was all, it was like raw. It was like lazy again, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, I'll just shoot it and fix it later. Yeah. Oh, I can burn this in. I can dodge that guy out. I can yep. do these things.
Fix it in post.
instead of framing it in the camera, say, you know, get it right in the camera, damn it, is what I've always said to people. I said, it's so much more rewarding because, you know, you got into photography to be a photographer, to be a storyteller, to be a journalist, or whatever aspect of photography you want. You probably didn't get into it to sit behind a computer all day or all night or Saturday night instead of going out with your friends or your spouse or whatever. You're sitting there, no, honey, I got to edit these pictures from that sunset in, you know, Seattle, Washington. Mm-hmm. No, that's not me. I'm going to get it right, and I'm going to go home, and I'm going to go out to dinner with my friends.
Yeah.
And I've always taken that approach since the early days, since shooting black and white as a kid, all through transparencies, all through neg. And when digital came along, we were, you know, the guys that shot transparency totally got digital because they understood the parameters of digital. The exposure had to be right on. You couldn't be more than a third or a half stop over or under. You know, you had to color white balance. Everybody's like, well, what's this white balance thing? It's like, well, you know, you got to put that, you know, green filter on your strobe to match the magenta slide, you know, the magenta on the front of the camera, and match those because, you know, you're walking down a hall and there's a whole bunch of fluorescent lights. Well, we understood that. And it made for an easy transition to digital. And it's probably one of the reasons why I wasn't an early adopter. I started shooting digital in 1996. Did a big thing for the Discovery Channel shooting. This is back when Discovery Online was like this brand new medium. Shot stills in a couple of places in the world with this new camera. 1.7 megapixel capture, yeah. you know, yeah. $17,000 yep. for the body alone and this big pack you carried with it. But I always realized that in everything that I do, I have to know as much, if not more, than the next guy, because it makes you more valuable if you can understand it. So in 96, 97, 98, that's when I started shooting a lot of digital for the newspaper. I was, you know, plugging into the dugout you know, at Orioles Park and transmitting pictures. You know, we were using sat phones, you know, around the world using, you know, in Fiji, shooting a adventure race for Discovery Channel. Yeah. And so we were doing things that were indeed pushing the envelope, much like the wire services were, because speed is you know, the most important thing to them. And I just remember thinking, it's like, so many people were out shooting negative film, and so many people were just like fixing it later. I mean, I did a trip out to photograph polar bears with a couple of Microsoft executives. And of course, they are all decked out in all kinds of super expensive gear. And they're all about, you know, the computer and RAW, and it's amazing. And you gotta, and I was shooting JPEG, which I always do, and shot some amazing pictures out there. Matthew Jordan Smith was with us and a number of other guys. And I shot JPEG in the Tundra buggy, and we're going back to the base camp because there's cocktail hour and there's dinner. And I came in, I'd already had my laptop with me on the Tundra buggy, you know, gone through it, captioned it, renamed files, did all the kind of stuff I needed to do, because that's what journalists do.
Yep.
We pulled in and I was ready. I just went through my camera and laptops on the bunk and went and had a drink. Didn't see those guys for 3 hours. I was like, I walked back and like, what are you guys doing? You're missing dinner. Oh, we're converting our RAW files to JPEG. I'm like, how about you just shoot RAW plus JPEG and just use the JPEGs. Never look at the RAW. I never look at RAWs because, and I shoot, you know, as I'm shooting black and white these days, I shoot RAW plus JPEG in the monochrome setting in the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Because the clients are like, oh, we love this black and white, or we love this, or this book I'm working on. They love, oh, this portrait's amazing in black and white. I had one client just recently say, do you have this in color? I said, of course I do. You take all the RAWs. I don't want them. I don't want them to take up space on my hard drive. Just take them all. Gave them to it, and they were just like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever.
But then Kevin, the argument becomes, you know, some people are listening to this or watching this, and they're saying, well, you know, well, with the RAW file, Kevin, you can pull back highlights or recover highlights and, you know, bring data out of overexposed shadows and that sort of thing. You're giving all that up, you know, and I know what you're going to say. Well, you can get it right in camera, but sometimes you can't.
Sometimes you can't.
So what do you say? So are you doing any sort of post-processing on these JPEGs at all? Or is it just like you're treating it like slide film, just an unlimited roll of slide film?
Well, listen, when you're shooting, you're looking through the camera and you see black and white. When the back of the screen is black and white, when you open it in the computer, it's black and white. You start to remember, oh, I love shadows, and I love the way light hit this way, and I love this and love that. And then you look in today's digital world and everything, you know, people are shooting RAW because they've got tungsten light here and ambient light there, and they've got window light coming this way. It's over, right? Shoot black and white is like, Don't call it lazy. Call it smart thinking, because you can take a really amazing photograph really quickly and not worry about all kinds of things. You're looking at light and pattern and shadows and composition. And it's very old school to go back to that where it really mattered. I mean, it's not like the zone system with Ansel Adams. I mean, it's not that crazy. But it's like, you know, your exposures, if they're close, they're going to look great. The only thing I do with my pictures now is I take it into Luminar and use some of the black and white presets that are there, which are just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it takes me all of, you know, I can batch, like hit this whole shoot I did, you know, 75 JPEGs, boom, drop them into Luminar, just have them all applied to this couple of filters that I've created for myself, and they're done.
Yeah.
They're just done. And I, you know, I can go and have a glass of wine with my wife.
get on with your life. That's awesome. I want to touch a little bit on there. So you mentioned Luminar. There's lots of tools that people are, I don't want to call it an exodus away from Lightroom, but there are alternatives to Lightroom now. So, you know, like you mentioned Luminar, there's Capture One, and, you know, on the Photoshop side, there's Affinity Photo, and, you know, versus Photoshop. What's your sort of go-to toolbox? You know, you mentioned Luminar. What else is in there?
Well, I try to be a minimalist as much as I can. I just don't want to waste time or do things that I'm not that excited about.
Yeah.
Taking the photographs is what it's all about. My workflow is I have used a product for 15 or 20 years called photo mechanic by mm-hmm. my good friend Dennis Walker. Yeah. It's just the greatest browser. It's the greatest way to see pictures. And when I see what I like, I save them and I import them into Luminar. And I just, you know, it used to be the whole kind of Photoshop thing. I was never a big Lightroom fan. Photoshop was the way to be. But I bring them into Luminar, and because I've set the preset, I've created my own Kevin looks. It's like you press a button and they're done.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, and that's me with Luminar. I mean, people with Capture One understand it, and Affinity understand where they're going with that. You know, it's hard to get people to try something different. Mm-hmm. People that have been Photoshop guys for 20 years are still Photoshop guys for the most part. I mean, yeah, they do Lightroom, but they're still just, you know, they love Photoshop and they love what it can do. Same thing with Lightroom. You know, I looked at Luminar and said, this is so much more fun. I was kind of getting into the whole, you know, the Instagram kind of looks and stuff like that. Like, wow, you can really do all these amazing things. And Luminar just solved this situation for me where I didn't want to monkey around. I'm all about outcomes. I know what I want the picture to look like, but I don't want to go into multiple layers and doing this and creating masks and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Show me what it's going to look like. Click. Hey, that's pretty nice. I can use a little slider. Add a little of this. Done. There's my recipe. I'm done.
Yeah. I love that.
That's becoming my look. And that's how I want my pictures to appear. And that's it.
Well, moving. So we'll talk about hardware, because you and I both love Panasonic cameras. I shoot with the camera I carry around with me when I'm carrying around a proper camera, and not just this guy. You know, is a G9. You know, I've fallen in love with my Lumix G9. What about you?
I'm a G9 guy.
You are? Oh, nice.
I'm a Panasonic global ambassador, which, you know, allows me great opportunities to talk to people about Micro Four Thirds. I swear I can't think of anything where I've said, oh, I wish I had my old Nikon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Shooting with the Lumix cameras. I have yet to come across that moment, because things just look great. They're fast. The autofocus is fast, and it's doing things for me and my photography, and especially shooting in black and white, just it's giving me this freedom, this whole new freedom to take pictures and do things and try things and don't worry about it. And the cameras are light and the lenses are sharp. They're Leica lenses and they're tack sharp and they're small. And I can go anywhere in the world with two cameras and two lenses and not even think about it.
That's so cool. What about the new ones? Are you being, you know, sort of seduced by the siren song of the full frame cameras that Panasonic just released?
Listen, those S1 cameras and the S1R cameras are incredible. I played with them a week and a half ago in Austin at the unveiling of the cameras, the North American launch, and they're incredible. They do just an amazing job. But you know, my feeling personally is that I still want to champion Micro Four Thirds because of what it does.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a studio guy. I'm not a big landscape guy. I'm a traveler. I'm a storyteller. I'm a portrait photographer. I'll see something and just take its picture. You can't do that carrying big S1s or carrying some of the big Sonys and the Nikon. And the lenses are huge, you know, from all the camera manufacturers.
And it's like one of your press photographer days, right?
Exactly. When you carried a couple of D3s with motor drives and 7200s and a 500 F4.
And a bag of film and extra batteries and all that stuff, right?
when I switched from Nikon to Panasonic about 3 years ago, I lost 18 pounds.
Wow.
Now, that's not Nutrisystem. That's 18 pounds of gear.
That wasn't lipo?
That was a camera lipo.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly. And I am going to continue to hopefully lead the drumbeat that Micro Four Thirds and the smaller cameras, which have incredible sensors and incredible optics, can be the right thing for you. Do you own a Tesla? No. Do I? No. But somebody does, and they love it, and they mm-hmm. want to spend the money, and it's a big car, and it's fast, and everything else. Great. I'm fine with, you know, a Ford Explorer. That's okay. I'll get there. We'll all get there.
Yeah.
It's just what you like and what feels good for you. And if you got to have the biggest and the baddest, man, that Panasonic S1 will just kill a lot of the other digital cameras in a competition.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a sledgehammer for image making. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about today, right? You and I, you revealed to me at WPPI, I think that was the revelation, that you had decided that you've come full circle, because you know, like, we all started in black and white, and now you're moving black to black and white for the most part exclusively, unless a special request for color comes in. Tell me about that change. Why? There's a lot of color out there. I mean, there's a lot of subjects that look better in color, arguably, and some look better in black and white. Why is Kim Gilbert focused on monochrome?
I like the simplicity of it. I love looking at light and patterns and just shapes and how light plays off somebody's face. You know, it's moody and it feels good, and if it's happy, you sense the happiness. It's not like, wow, that girl's got a really beautiful pink coat on and a green hat and she's smiling. It's like, no, in black and white, everything is all about that story, about that smile.
Yeah.
I have some pictures of my wife we shot in the snow, and this beautiful picture, and it looks great in color, but I switched to black and white and shot it, and it was like, oh my God, it just had this feeling to it that was just something so simple. And I talk a lot to people about shooting black and white and just trying it and seeing, you know, it's not like everybody should run and shoot black and white for clients or anything, but you certainly can. And, you know, the pictures can be so moving. And it's really a very simple thing to do. You know, you cover your butt by shooting RAW plus JPEG, right? So you got the RAW file, mm-hmm. but you got a JPEG fine or JPEG large or whatever what your camera calls it. And then you switch the picture style to standard to a black and white. And like the Panasonic cameras have a couple of different black and white settings, but I pick one that's called Monochrome D, and you can tweak in the camera, and so that everything you look at through the camera, on the screen, on your computer, is what you saw visually, that black and white, that stark image, that silhouette, whatever it happens to be. But you've got the RAW file in case somebody needs it. And like I said before, nobody asks. They see the black and white and they just go, man, that's so cool. I love that. Yeah. Can I make a print? Can I get a print of that? Sure.
Isn't that cool, though? I mean, that part of that is just... You have the ability to do that now, you know, back in the day. I mean, we sound like two old guys talking, but back in the day, it was, you had to, I mean, back, you know, I was a combat photojournalist in the Air Force. So we carried around multiple bags. So we had, you know, multiple cameras and lenses and strobes, mm-hmm. and then another bag with film in it just in case. And you had to have multiple speeds of film just in case it got dark and you were outside, you know, so... To have all that magic and be able to make those decisions, like you're making the decision, you know what, I'm just going to go black and white. But if I want to go back to color, I can on any one of those images. That seems like sorcery, it's just crazy.
The word I keep going back to is freedom.
Yeah.
It's really, it's this feeling, this sense of, oh my gosh, I can do anything. I can go in anywhere. I've got a 1.2 85 millimeter lens, a Leica lens that I use with my Panasonic camera. I can walk in anywhere, anytime, unless it's dark, like dark, dark, dark. I can go and make a picture.
Yeah.
I don't have to think about, oh, I only want to shoot at, you know, 400 ISO, and I need a couple of pro photo strobes, and I need to do this, and I need to some LED lights, and no, I just walk in. I say, can you stand over there? That's really pretty light. Oh, it's tungsten light, and the other thing is fluorescent light. Doesn't matter. It's light. I'm seeing the shape. I'm seeing your face. Right. That's a really beautiful image of you. Bam, shot it, done. And my gosh, I can go. I'm this is definitely not bragging or anything, but because anybody can do it. If you go in being that way, thinking black and white, have the right gear to shoot available light black and white, anybody can go in and shoot 5 or 6 different kind of portraits in 10 or 15 minutes somewhere. They can go in and they can cover something, go to an office, you know, do whatever kind of photojournalism or client work you've got to do. But when you're shooting in black and white, everything goes away and allows you the freedom to just look at light and to look at the subject and how the subject's playing. And it's just, it is, my God, it's the most fun I've had in a long time, is just saying, I'm just going to shoot black and white. Why do I need to look out the window? I see beautiful clouds and everything up there. Okay, you know what? Those beautiful clouds can look great in Luminar and black and white. I'll just sky enhance, boom, 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 black and white, done.
Yeah. 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 It gets you back to the basics, back to the art of what you're trying to do, or the art of photography versus, you know, or in other words, you're removing a lot of decisions that you need to make when you're shooting in color. You know, does that color work here? Or is that, you know, it's a compositional element. You remove that compositional element from the mind process, and it's just shades of gray and where things are sitting in the image, and you can like you said you can concentrate on the story. Have you ever thought about infrared photography?
Oh, I've done some. You know, I've had one of my Panasonic cameras made into an infrared camera.
Oh, did you? How'd that work out?
It's great. There's a place right here up here in Seattle. I forget the guy's name, but you can send your camera and it comes back 2 weeks later, and it's an infrared camera only. It's pretty awesome.
That's cool. Which one did you send?
I used one of the G7s from a couple of years ago, the Panasonics.
Yeah.
Because it's just a baby version of the G9, which I love. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's fantastic. You could do all kinds of stuff. And I was never an infrared guy, but I tried it a few times. I'm like, this is the coolest. People see it and they go, what did you do? They figure you fixed it in Photoshop. And you're like, no, got it right in the camera. It's exactly what it looked like.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because it's like, remember the old way to shoot infrared was you needed infrared film, which was very, very slow. Right, which meant you had to either shoot on a tripod and do these really long exposures, or have a filter on the camera, all kinds of crazy stuff. Now, like you're saying, if you have your camera modified, then yeah, the exposure is going to change because infrared light is different than visible light, but still, you can get what you see, you know, for the most part.
Absolutely. And you know, this whole RAW plus JPEG thing has been around. I covered the Bush and Gore campaign in, what was that, 2000?
Mm-hmm.
And I was using the Nikon D1 shooting RAW plus JPEG. And you know, I was turning in images, just these amazing black and white images, I thought. Felt very, you know, kind of old school Kennedy-esque kind of images of Al Gore and hands out into the crowd, those kind of things.
Yeah.
And I did some of that on the West Wing TV show as well. For NBC, and I sent them all the images, and they're like, where's the color stuff? And I'm like, it's right there. I sent it to you. And they're like, we don't get it. How do you turn this black and white into color? And so this was, you know, it's what, 18 years later, I've come full circle to being, people understand raw files. They understand black and white, but I'm just going to do the work for you and for myself in black and white, because it's fun. It's liberating. It's a sense of freedom. And it's just, it's so simple.
Yeah.
And I challenge anybody to just go out and shoot for a day, shoot pictures of your kids, your families, your dogs, your cats, your backyard, sunsets, whatever. When you think it's all color, shoot it in black and white and try it. RAW plus JPEG, and just look at the JPEGs. You're going to open your eyes to something that, you know, you thought, oh, that's just,
I'm going to set my G9 to black and white RAW plus JPEG. Would you say you're doing the monochrome D setting?
I use monochrome D, which is, it's a, and you know, in the Panasonic cameras, you can actually go in and adjust those filter settings, so you can add more contrast or fill in shadows, so you don't even have to monkey around with it in the computer.
Yeah.
Get it right in the camera.
You're a bad influence, Kevin. In a good way. All right, so what's next for you, man? What's next for Kevin Gilbert? Where you are, you off to exotic places, and you know, what's on your travel card?
Well, travel's being curtailed because we're having a little boy in a couple of months.
Oh, congratulations. So,
thank you. My travel schedule is being curtailed quite dramatically. You know, I tend to do a lot of things, right? I teach on private cruise ships, 100 person cruise ships around the world. I do some of that stuff and just do my work as a photo coach. But you know, we're doing just a ton of work for Best Buy, for Sony, for Alpha Universe, for a lot of, you know, our company Blue Pixel is just involved in so many things, you'd be surprised at how many things we're involved in, you know, with Microsoft and software companies and Skylum and with Luminar. And, you know, we're just doing so many things that, and Panasonic, it's not like the Academy Award, I must thank Panasonic. But you know, we're just doing things for the industry that touch imaging, that touch photography, that touch storytelling. And it's, and I'm just this little outlier saying I'm only going to shoot black and white, you know. You know, everybody else is doing these incredible, things in Photoshop or with Luminar or whatever. And I'm like, that's awesome. But I didn't see that. I didn't see that coming. I would rather try it this way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm luckily in that position where, as I'm like, I'm shooting this new book for a venture capital firm in Silicon Valley, and I'm just covering and the story of the products that these companies are making, and how they're trying to change the world in a very world positive way, and it's all black and white. And I said, okay, should we shoot this third book in color? And they were like, oh no, oh my gosh, our investors, our CEOs and founders of the company, they just think the black and white is the coolest thing they've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay,
it's a good juxtaposition of new world technology and bleeding edge tech with kind of an older school look, like black and white, right? Because it's like, oh, what? That's a Tesla, but it's in black and white. I don't get that. You're right.
And even some people say, oh, yeah, you're just cheating. And I'm like, you've been cheating sitting on your computer for 4 hours fixing that photo.
You've been cheating with your crutch, right?
That's not what it was like. No, no.
Yeah. Well, cool. Kevin Gilbert, if people want to follow you or hire you or otherwise see what you're up to, what's a good place for them to connect to you at?
Well, you can always look at my photographs at kevingilbertphotography.com. I'm not a big social media guy, so I don't have these millions of followers except in my dreams at night.
and they have pitchforks.
Kevin Gilbert USA is where you'll usually find me on Instagram or other places. And I don't put a lot up there. I'm actually just about to start putting the black and whites up. It's time for me to put my you know, my stamp on that part of the social world with things that I'm doing.
I want to see some of those shots from your archive. I mean, do the Pete Souza thing. I mean, his Instagram is making waves. Right?
I'll send you one picture of Al Gore. It's the picture that kind of got me thinking. Even now, 18 years later, it's like I should have been doing a lot more of this.
Yeah, yeah. Please do send that over.
I will.
All right, Kevin Gilbert. Thank you for coming on, man. I appreciate you.
Hey, you're welcome. It's fun.
All right,
and go shoot some black and white.
I am right after this. I'm pulling out the G9 and I'm going to tweak it into black and white. I'm going to force myself to shoot black and white for a full week and see what that feels like.
Let me know when you want to do a photo contest and I'll judge it of people shooting black and white.
Awesome.
Black and white.
All right, you're on record now. Perfect. Good.
All right, man.
All right, Kevin Gilbert, take care, man.
Thanks. See y'all. Bye.
This is Twitter.